welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have David Christopher Lewis, Living a Soulful Life. A little bit about yourself and how you were introduced to AFRA.
Yeah, I'm 50. Well, I just turned 60, born in Chicago back in 1956, and I studied the teachings of the Ascended Masters for 30 years, and then I had my own mystical experience in 2004 where I kind of went up into a very high state of being, and this wonderful, you know, beyond this dimension plane. And after that, I received this gift of clairaudience, which allows me to communicate directly with divine beings telepathically. So AFRA is a great master who was the first to ascend from the continent of Africa 35,000 years ago. You know, for those of us who study the teachings of the masters, we've heard a lot about Eastern masters, Western masters, you know, but have we heard too much about African masters? So this was kind of new to me when I first heard his name back in the mid-1970s, mm-hmm. and through Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and she had been to Africa a couple times. Well, I've been privileged to go to Africa 3 times, and I'm going again, actually, at the end of this month to South Africa to share my book that you mentioned, Living a Soulful Life. So AFRA came to me and delivered a whole series of beautiful teachings on love, brotherhood, and freedom. And this book is a compilation of just some amazing words that edify, that allow us to understand through our own higher self what is transpiring upon the earth right now, to access this light of brother sisterhood and freedom that is so essential for the evolution of the earth, for the transcendence of all of us into a higher state of awareness, and really for the resolving of conflict, because we see that everywhere, and it's really time that we put this beneath our feet and we move on past all of the strife, the struggles, the dissonance, and embrace true brother sisterhood. And so that's, you know, a little bit about what the book is focused on.
So early in the book, you talk about the blue and violet races of today. You want to go into that a little bit more and definition?
They were many thousands of years ago. Throughout the Earth's history, there have been what are called root races, where vast evolutions of souls kind of incarnate in a wave or a grouping, and they have a kind of a collective mission to go through the initiatic path to evolve and to earn their eternal freedom and to ascend. So mm-hmm. One of the first waves of this ancient age was the blue race. Now, it doesn't mean that they were all physically colored blue, but the energy of their auras was primarily this deep, intense blue that signified the power that they wielded. And there was actually a slight tinge of this bluish color in their skin, kind of like what you see in the movie Avatar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting. And so this race was very, very powerful. They were physically of great stature. They had these great gifts of spirit that allowed them to do a lot more than we can do today physically, including mm-hmm. levitation and other things. And so a lot of the African people were actually part of that race. Mm-hmm. And then the violet race was 6 cycles later, because in this whole evolution, there were 7 rays released, and so you go from blue to violet. The violet race had great attainment also in another context, and that was focusing on freedom, alchemy, and this amazing violet frequency of the 7th wave, and they are those who have this soulfulness. They have this deep soul connection with the earth, with the universe, with each other, and that's what we see primarily within the African people as they're spread now throughout the world, who have this soulfulness. And we even talk about, you know, soul music, soul train, soul food. And and nowadays, we're learning more about what the soul is. So this book speaks about how we can live a soulful life, tapping into what Afra teaches, which is really amazing and something that I had never really found anywhere else or considered with the depths of awareness until he revealed a lot of this to us.
Now, these root races have, I guess, intermixed a great deal. Would you talk about the other root races that are represented?
Well, these are the two that are primarily spoken of in this book. And in the teachings of theosophy, it talks about the Manus of the races, these great solar lords who descended, and they're kind of the archetypal divine example of what a true representative of that race or that root race should be. And they model that Christic or Buddhic or divine mother energy and frequency. And so as for instance, in a 144,000-year cycle, there may be a number of root races, and then within those root races, like a 2,000 or 2,150-year cycle, which also is kind of in alignment with the precession of the equinoxes, you see these life waves coming who have a different energy. And like, for instance, you've heard of the indigo children. Well, a lot of these children have this auric pattern of this deep violet, blue, purple, or indigo energy, and so they're kind of shaking things up on the earth, and they're not settling for what they see on the earth as this collective awareness that's less than what they really are destined to outpicture. They have great attainment. They have often they have the ability to do things that, you know, we've kind of been dumbed down into not doing because of all, you know, the culture that we live in and the civilization that's on Earth. And so we see each of these root races as evolving through cycles, through initiations to bring something new and beneficial to the Earth. And yes, you're right that many of them have now intermarried. You know, some of the earlier root races were all supposed to ascend, yet some kind of lagged behind. And so we have an intermixing of a lot of these ancient peoples, and some of us are some of them. You know, like the fact that we accept reincarnation and karma from an early age shows that we're older souls. Whereas some of the, you know, like the Christians who are more fundamental in their belief system, they just don't have that depth of understanding of what the cosmos is all about, of the initiatic path, of the evolution of the soul. They're reliant upon, you know, Jesus to do it all for them, and they're, you know, not all of them are that way. However, you know, they just don't quite understand all these dynamics that we're talking about. And so, you know, they have to evolve. They have to grow. They have to have life experience, soul experience. And so as they go through their incarnations, they gather more understanding through what they experience so that they can become richer and more whole in the totality of their soul and their spirit. So, you know, I think you and I are obviously older souls. We know we came for a mission to help heal people, to enlighten people, to bring awareness and consciousness into the present day experience so that we can free people from the trappings of an awareness less than, you know, the true reality of spirit.
Afra had some interesting things to say about his relationship with Saint Germain, and I think it's interesting that in his description of them trading places between student and master and all of the interactions they had, it's pretty interesting.
They've collaborated for thousands of years, and yeah, it's really an interesting dynamic. You know, Saint Germain's Ascension Day is May 1st, and Afra's is November 1st, 6 months exactly apart, and they are true brothers. And in fact, Saint Germain, you know, means holy brother, and then of course, Afra, you still look at his name, and it's like based on the same root as fraternity, which is brotherhood. Mm-hmm. So they both really exemplify this true spirit of oneness and unity and harmony that the earth so requires right now, and they do collaborate on a lot of things. Saint Germain attends many of the sessions of what's called the African Council of the Universal mm-hmm. Brotherhood, and then Afra goes to Saint Germain's retreat and communicates and shares insights into what is happening upon the continent of Africa, the challenges that are upon the peoples of the various cultures, and the dynamics that are at play right now, so that he can bring to those spiritual councils awareness, and then they can send forth dispensations and graces and blessings to raise people up to move beyond limitation and the issues and problems of today. And, you know, Mandiba, which is a name for a great soul who, you know, we all know, went through his struggle as Nelson Mandela has ascended. And he is part and parcel to this whole shift, you know, that allowed us to move beyond apartheid into an awareness of the worth of every soul, every individual, no matter what their race, the equality and freedom that's essential. And so, you know, Madiba is a great, great being now, and he chose to come into incarnation specifically to help get rid of apartheid. And yeah, it was a struggle, A Long Walk to Freedom, you know, the title of his book. And so he exemplifies a lot of what that spirit of Afra is, mm-hmm. that soulful attitude, that grace, that forgiveness. You know, without his reconciliation toward the whites who had imprisoned him, there could have been greater chaos, confusion, and bloodshed in South Africa and throughout Africa. Yet because he went through the initiatic path and actually read a lot of Shakespeare, mm-hmm. they smuggled in a complete works of Shakespeare. I don't know how many times he read it, but he really evolved in his own thinking, and because of his, forgiveness and the reconciliation that occurred, it was amazing. And many of us who went to South Africa visited the very prison on that island where he was, and it was amazing to actually walk into that cell and to feel kind of the vibration that was there of what he had to have gone through.
Yeah, and if you read the history, Nelson really had to change his inner being. He had to transmute things within himself. You know, he was much more angry person earlier, and he had to transmute all of that, which he did in prison.
Exactly.
It's an amazing story, you know, because he had to be the change. I mean, you know, you think great souls are great souls, but they still have to do the work when they come down here.
We all do, and that's why some of the saints have been through the hardest trials, and they may have entered into darkness or, you know, made some wrong turns mm-hmm. for the very purpose of experiencing those choices and then being able to help others who have been kind of temporarily enslaved in the same type of mentality or vibration. So,
that's exactly right. Yeah.
True that. It's amazing what the transformation that can occur for thousands and even millions.
Well, what Michael the Archangel has told us in session is that the people who are leading the way literally have to clear the paths. You know, it's like he said, like with me, I'm in medicine. I'm walking this path that has stones and branches and bushes, and I'm clearing a small path. He said, but later that's going to be a super highway. And, you know, it is hard because when you're different, people don't like you. I mean, people attack you. They are frightened of what you're doing, even though you're trying to just help people. So I think it's really true that you have to be that change, and then the people that come after you, it's easier for them.
Exactly. And you're doing it, I'm doing it, and many spiritual entrepreneurs, I kind of call them, are doing it because that's their calling. That's their inner mission. It's the impulse that's set within their soul before we incarnate, and we chose. I mean, we chose this.
We volunteered. There's no question.
Yeah.
See, I was spiritually guided to get breast implants in meditation, knowing that, you know, the left one was going to leak. Well, I didn't know it at the time, but I guess Spirit knew the left one was going to leak 30 grams, and I was going to get deathly ill and have to figure out this illness. But, you know, it's all spiritual guidance, all of it. It's very interesting. So yeah. I'm sure Nelson was guided the same way, you know. It's even though that guidance ended him up in prison, it's all part of the path.
Yeah, one person thought that he had killed people, and in my research, I found out he personally never killed anyone.
Yeah, I don't think he killed people, but I think he was upset. I think he internally it was hard for him to, you know, to be in that place in society without dealing with his anger about it. I think he had to eventually deal with his anger, which is what we all have to do. I mean, you know, there's a lot of injustices on earth, and you have to not live in that anger. You have to transmute that into something else.
Yeah, it's righteous indignation to observe the injustice, and then to have that fire in your belly to go forth and to do your mission to change it. So, you know, the Gandhis and the Martin Luther Kings and the Nelson Mandelas will also always be heroes because they were willing to, you know, walk that talk and to go to prison and pay the price.
Yeah, it's really true. Well, I mean, look at what Jesus Christ ended up on the cross, and from what we've heard about that, that wasn't really part of the bargain either. You know, he basically felt that the ascension was imminent and made some moves based on that assumption, and then ended up, you know, with maybe, overstepping some things and ending up on the cross, which wasn't, at least he said that wasn't part of the plan when he was communicating with our group. So, I don't know. I think everybody, all of the masters, all of the people that came to make a difference, they all have very interesting paths that are require a lot of judgment on the way, and sometimes, like they say, they make mistakes. You know, they misjudge timing and yeah. So
I've riled things up here and there, and I'm sure you have too. However, you know, things have to be riled up because people are making wrong choices based on the FDA and the AMA and what's out there, which is not always healthy. So it's time that we have a cleaning up of our whole medical profession, and as you're helping, you know, do that.
Well, from my viewpoint, most of the problems in medicine, which are causing such great expense, are because the diseases that they're treating, the true treatment is politically incorrect. You know, they want to treat something with a drug or a surgery that actually should be treated differently. But if you try to treat it differently, if you try to treat cancer differently, obviously you can get a bullet in your head or get bashed your head bashed in with a baseball bat. Now that 33 doctors have been killed, but I feel like we're really on the edge of all of this being exposed. The CDC is releasing documents that showed it knew about thimerosal. The FDA is, you know, is doing dances around things that they. I really think that it's all going to be exposed, and when it is, then medicine and healthcare will be a lot more rational and a lot less expensive, and doctors won't be afraid to practice medicine thinking that they may lose their license or get killed.
Yep, yeah.
I'm very hopeful for the future because I think things are shifting.
I was a doctor in a past life, but it was a lot different. It wasn't all about drugs. And, you know, I think in our last interview when we talked about the Aura book, or Melanosis Mains book on alchemy, you know, I think I mentioned youngest brother is a doctor, and he's never taken one class in nutrition.
Yeah.
And diet and nutrition in college, and that's just the norm right now. And so it's got to change, and it will.
It will. Yeah, I think it will. So let's see. I had another question here about the Ark of the Covenant. So it's very interesting information here on the Ark of the Covenant. Would you like to tell us what Afra told us about the Ark of the Covenant?
Yeah, it's actually, you know, there's the spiritual Ark of the Covenant, and then there's the physical. And
mm-hmm.
the spiritual Ark of the Covenant is kind of an altar that we can all create, co-create with God within our heart to do spiritual work, alchemy, to do our higher, you know, spiritual calling and mission.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the physical Ark of the Covenant, as I understand it, and Afra confirmed, actually ended up going to Ethiopia and is in
mm-hmm.
this little church, and it's guarded by this guy, and the people in that town know all about it, you know, but people aren't allowed to go in.
Right.
And so it's kind of hidden off, but it's a powerful communicator. It was like the center of communication between the heaven world and the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually study how, you know, the description of it with the gold and everything, you can see that it was actually it allowed for there to be this energy descending from a higher octave into the physical and allow there to be this wonderful communication as well as the descent of this energy. Just like the pyramids were originally covered in this golden glaze,
mm-hmm.
and then I think the Muslims took it off and made a temple out of that stuff, and now you don't see that. But you could actually see the pyramids from outer space when the sun shone off of them. They were so amazing. So I think the Ark of the Covenant, well, I could read from the book, or you could read from the book. That's one of the 33 Darshan questions that was asked in the first third of the book. And then the second part is, I think, about 15 heart streams. What I call heart streams are these dictations from the soul of Afra. And then there's like four more Darshan questions in that section. And then the third part of the book is about prayers and invocations, affirmations. And then there's some appendices. But these 33 Darshan questions are really interesting. And
they are.
If you'd like me to read about it, or people can just, you know, log onto our website or go to Amazon.com and purchase the book and read it for yourself.
Well, one of the things we were told about Ark of the Covenant is that it's actually the ignition for the ascension. It's like if you were going to start the ascension, you have to turn the key in the Ark of the Covenant. So that'll be very interesting what role the physical Ark plays in the ascension.
Yeah. Let me read it says the physical Ark of the Covenant is housed in Ethiopia and acts as a cosmic transformer, whereby the energy currents of the divine that are too great to be received by mankind are translated through this communication device between the heaven, world, and earth. Similarly, at etheric levels of being, in every sacred sanctuary, there's a focal point for the release of light from spirit to matter. Being a transformer, the Ark is highly charged with cosmic electromagnetic energy. And then, you know, he talks about in the Bible where the guy touched it and was instantly killed as he tried to kind of brace it when it looked like it was going to tip over. And it wasn't because of an angry God or anything like that. It was just that it was supercharged with this energy. It's like touching an electric high power voltage line.
And the priest that took care of the Ark in the Temple of Solomon knew that.
Exactly, right.
So that nobody went and just touched the Ark. I mean, nobody could just go up and be near the Ark.
Now, one thing we notice in the events that we have, and I'm sure in the spiritual work that you do in your group, is when you gather together and you co-create this, what we call a flow field, you have a much more powerful release of energy through the collective awareness of all the people. And then when a master, they accentuate that and they step through the veil, and then there's this supercharging of the atmosphere, and you all feel this tingling or this rush, the Holy Spirit, whatever you'd like to call it. And then you have the surge of that, which is really powerful for transformation. So I think that type, the thing that we all feel through our chakras today, those of us who are more sensitive, the priests felt back then, too, and they could be a vehicle for the distribution to the congregation of that light. Now, the masters are saying, we don't require, you know, these intermediaries or priests. We all have the ability to tune directly into the divine frequency and to receive it through our chakras, through our energy system, you know, the energy centers and meridians. And that's the initiation for today, is that we're all able to do this through our attunement, through our meditation practice, through prayer, through singing, chanting, invocation, whatever. And that's why in the third section of the book we have these new prayers, which are not meant to displace any personal path of you know, how you commune directly with the divine. It's just an opportunity to kind of, it's like a formula for tuning into Afra or all these great masters, Saint Germain, using what we call the crystal diamond tube of light around us to seal us in this inviolate energy of perfection and freedom. So, you know, Afra gives so many keys in this book, and I just encourage people to check it out. Heartscenter.org is our website. Hearts, no apostrophe, hearts, plural, center.org.
Yeah, Afra has some great lessons, too, about karma. You know, you asked questions about the slave trade, and basically he responded that the slaves were slave owners in previous lives, and it was a cycle that just kept repeating until, I guess, we got tired of that pattern and quit having slaves. They're still sexual slaves in today's world, too. So we haven't gotten out of it completely.
Yeah, and we're all slaves to something, right? And so we have, by doing the work internally, we can help break the cycle and transmute it and then move on. But all the people with a big sense of injustice about anything typically were those who leveled injustice on others. Like, I've noticed how I've seen the record of people that are Native Americans in this life who feel this deep sense of injustice. Well, they were the cowboys and the people that killed off the natives before.
Mm-hmm.
They have to re-embody and experience that, you know,
what they caused, right?
Exactly. And the same, unfortunately, with a lot of African Americans who have a deep sense of injustice. That's why studying Madiba, you know, Nelson Mandela, is important, because if we move beyond that sense of injustice, then we can enter into new energy and then, you know, be co-creative and forgive and forget and move on. And it doesn't mean that you become a doormat, and it doesn't mean that you don't work on equality. It just means that you don't let that sense of injustice consume you to the point where you're focusing on it so much that it becomes this anger within you that is a fire that unless you get a hold, you know, control over it, it'll consume you.
Yeah, well, we're about the same age, and I remember back when there was Women's Lib and the Black Panthers and the, you know, all of the movements, the gay movement and everything. I could see very clearly that the real militant female women's libbers, the more violent and militant ones, had been men that oppressed women. I could just see that. It was very interesting. So I kind of figured that out back then when you looked at their energy and you said, hey, wait a minute, I think they were the militant Black Panthers might have been slave owners, you know. It's the energy's right there, though. It's you can definitely see it.
I 100% agree with you, and it's like whatever you react to, that's the button that has to be pressed so that you can you know, get your victory over it through forgiveness, love, kindness,
right.
direction.
That's true.
And until you realize that, you're just in this vicious cycle of recreating the same old patterns, but just in a different body with a different modus operandi, but basically the same challenge or initiation.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, we're still dealing with this in this country. I mean, we've had a lot of polarization of race relations because of the political situations. We've had a lot of polarization of the, socioeconomic classes, which is sometimes even more than race. I think the poor versus the rich, struggles are really the root of much of the problems of the world. And it doesn't seem to be resolving. It seems like we're still working these things out.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have, instead of the haves and the have-nots, just everybody living in brotherhood, sisterhood, understanding, peace, and not even eventually having countries and isms and all that, because it's just things that divide us and label us. And when we move beyond labels and classifying, I think we move into what's called the unity field of beingness rather than duality. And that's where, in this field of unity, we can experience true love, true brother sisterhood, true freedom. And that's what this book is about. It really kind of takes some of what Eckhart Tolle shared and highlights that in a different voice, with this understanding of the eternal now, the present moment, and what we require right now to deal with the challenges of today.
Yeah. So one of the things that is important to heal these divisions is, and this is what Afra talked about in the section 32, is music. Music can help heal the different, divisions between poor and rich, black and white, the race problems. So he talks about music. So would you like to say a little bit about what he had to say about music?
Yeah, well, he says all music is vibration. The preeminent factor that determines whether music uplifts the soul or not is the specific qualification of the vibration emanating through the composer, the conductor, the musicians, the singers, at the time of both the conception of and the performance of the music. So if someone is in a state of love and of appreciation and gratitude to the divine, and they pour that energy into their music, I think everyone feels it. It's like I was watching Cat Stevens before he became converted over to Islam, singing Morning is Broken. And when you watched him play that music, it was like he looked like he was in bliss, just pouring his whole being into the song. And, of course, that's one of my favorite songs from that time. So it really is about the awareness of the person and the vibration that you put into it. And a lot of people, in heavy rock music, they're just talking about all kinds of crazy stuff, and I just don't get any light from that. I'm sorry, I don't feel the light going up my chakras. Whereas in beautiful, sublime, harp music or Indian ragas and chanting and other types of music that are maybe a little bit more classical, I feel the energy, rising through my kundalini and the chakras and spinning, and then it really is amazing. Now, I'm not saying all rock music is bad. It's just that where is the consciousness of the creator of it? Are they dedicating this toward the divine, or is it just to make money or to sing something or repeat the same old words? I've created, I've composed about 90 songs, and every one of them is dedicated to something of light, of love, of angelic intercession or whatever. And I think that, well, even in India, in ages past, they only allowed people to be musicians who were spiritually oriented and who studied for years before they would ever be allowed to play publicly, because they knew the effect on the culture to have music pure. So, you know, music is an amazing vehicle of both expression and of energy and divine frequencies. So, I don't know. Every person's experience is different.
Mm-hmm.
However, it kind of warns us to, you know, not engage in the type of, you know, listening to the type of music that lowers our vibration, that brings us into the kind of the astral plane of darkness. And so a lot of, you know, rap music does that, unfortunately, because the words are not very uplifting.
I was listening to the top 500 rock songs on the river this Memorial Day weekend. You know, they played the top 500, and I was really surprised that the top, you know, 20 or so, many of them were very uplifting. It's very interesting, you know, because you think they did have a pattern to them, that they were way more uplifting. Like, do you remember the Beatles, Imagine? That was in the top 20.
I would say Imagine.
Imagine a world with no religion, yeah.
But, and I don't really consider that rock music. I think it's more...
But this was the top... This is the top 20 in rock.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. So
yeah, well,
the top 20 in rock are actually more spiritually based music. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, Imagine is one of my favorites, and I think...
Right.
You know,
so there's plenty of them, like Stairway to Heaven. I mean, that's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
You know, there's... but and many of them are very, very spiritual. Even Living on a Prayer, you know, it's by Bon Jovi. I mean, it's... They're all very spiritual works, even though they're rock and roll. But those are the ones that end up in the top 20. So it's very interesting to me. So people like to listen to that.
They feel the consciousness of the composer.
Right, right.
And that's what pours through that inspires them and why they desire to hear it again. And, of course, there's some melodic and some aspects of it that are really, you know, deeply moving, too. There has to be.
Yeah, yeah. I was just surprised because I was, you know, you always wonder what are the most popular songs, and a lot of them were quite spiritual. it was an interesting revelation to me.
Yeah, awesome. So. Yeah, we were in Hawaii recently listening to the big chubby guy that passed on, singing Over the Rainbow, playing the ukulele, and I just feel so much love from that soul and his beautiful voice, and you know, the people, the native Hawaiians just loved him, you know, they absolutely adored him, and when he passed on, there's this whole video of him, them spreading his ashes, and I just think he had such a huge heart, it couldn't be contained in a body.
Right. So what are some of the other messages that AFRA has for us during this time?
Well, basically, it really comes down to each of us tapping into our soul and be living more soulfully. And what does that mean? It means our soul chakra is the violet chakra, where we experience our eternal nature at a very deep level of beingness through heart-centeredness. And when we can go through life and feel our soul and attempt to be soulful in our communications and the ways we interact with others and our responses, then what happens is this rich tapestry of light begins to wrap itself around each of us, our relationships, our work, and that mystical, magical, miraculous energy of the violet light transforms everything. And it transmutes the past and engenders the magic of the eternal now, within the future that we're constantly co-creating through every moment. And as long as we're conscious and we attempt to live soulfully, then I believe we are on the right path. And we can have a golden crystal age, just as there was one in Africa where the Sahara Desert is now, 70,000 to 35,000 years ago. And that may be hard to believe for some people, but, you know, if they misuse nuclear energy, what happens? It becomes a desert. Mm-hmm. And so the Earth has to cleanse all that stuff over time and purify it. And so what do? They create a desert so that nobody goes there, so that the nuclear energy doesn't, you know, the radiation doesn't impact them. So if we truly desire golden crystal age of enlightenment, freedom, and true divine love, then we are all participants in it. We all have to do the work, the inner work, and it begins with us. And so he's calling us to higher awareness. He's asking mm-hmm. people to release their fixations on the past and on the troubles, the problems, the injustices, and to move forward and to grow, basically grow up.
Yeah. Well, that would be. Do you think the ascended masters are communicating now in a more concentrated way because we're close to the ascension?
Yeah, I absolutely. And there's so many groups now, so many people that know about the ascended masters, know especially about Saint Germain, because he's key for right now. What people mm-hmm. don't know is about Afra and his collaboration with Saint Germain. And that's why this book is really kind of a cutting edge book for right now, because if they knew how much these two masters collaborate, they'd get mm-hmm. to know Afra more and be able to tap into him, call to him, invoke him. Because think of this, he ascended 35,000 years ago. He's been an ascended master for millennia. So obviously very, very powerful as a result. When I receive his live heart streams as oral dictations, his voice is very, very deep. And to me, that mm-hmm. signifies his soulfulness, the depth of his being. And it's like the register of my voice can't even quite get down as deep as his voice. And mm-hmm. Master, he tries to make me my voice close to, you know, what his is, and yet I can't quite sustain it. Mm-hmm. But that signifies to me how powerful he is. And mm-hmm. so if you really desire a little bit more spiritual power in your life, go to these great divine beings who have that power, and he's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Appendix 1 talks about members of the African Council. That's an interesting group of people there.
Yeah, you may not know of, but there are these people who in their last life they were African Americans or Africans. And mm-hmm. so they're called to this council to serve, to help establish throughout the world, not just in Africa, but everywhere, this new energy of brother-sisterhood, because that's the key that will heal all the racial divides and mm-hmm. the problems between clans, between, you know, I mean, what we see going on in different parts of Africa that have been, you know, the slaughter of different races or religions, or, you know, the girls and, you know, what happened in Rwanda. I mean, it's some of these genocides are just so outlandishly cruel, and it's hard to believe that things like that go on our earth. So this council is constantly trying to inspire individuals to become leaders to overcome the darkness. And mm-hmm. unfortunately what happens is a lot of the people that seek power do it for personal reasons rather than service. And so when you get the right leaders, you just have a lot of corruption, and you see that in Nigeria and mm-hmm. in another countries. And so they're constantly trying to work through individuals on earth to change the culture, person by group by group. And it's a process. It's not easy.
Yeah. It, That's very true. I mean, we've had more genocides in Africa than probably any other continent recently.
So. Yeah, it's horrific. And I think that's why I'm going back, is every time we do a lot of spiritual work to anchor light and to infuse mm-hmm. the entire continent with this frequency of love, gratitude, appreciation, generosity, and, you know, to try to forestall the darkness and to engender people to transform. Now, when we went to Ghana, I tell you, the people of Ghana are amazing. I've never seen such light in the eyes and in the auras of people on the earth. The children are so beautiful, and it's a very Christian nation in the south part, you know, closer to the Atlantic Ocean, and then as you go further inland and east and north, and you get into the tribal areas and some of the Muslims. But it's amazing. I never saw anyone smoking except some white Westerners.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many churches and little schools and stuff, and the children are beautiful. So there's a lot of hope in Africa, too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of information on a daily basis about either the good things or the not so good things coming out of Africa. I mean, you don't hear about it. One of my close friends was he was an infectious disease doctor that used to talk at the CDC all the time. He's one of the researchers that came up with the protease inhibitors, and he used to stay with me when he talked at the CDC. He said, it's kept out of Western media that 3/4 of the cities in some of the African cities were all the people died of AIDS. You know, that just wasn't even, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't realize how badly AIDS decimated Africa.
Yeah, and so. Some people think that it was created by us, rather than just something that evolved out of nature.
Well, it wasn't so much human. It was more extraterrestrial. It was meant for population control, but
exactly.
It was brought in through certain organizations. Definitely, there's definite proof of that. And I think it was actually an idea that was given for population control.
I agree with
but
you.
But wasn't necessarily by humans, okay? The idea didn't come from humans. It was implemented by humans, but...
Exactly. It came out of the astral.
It was definitely a technology that was brought in for that specific purpose, and it worked quite well, evidently.
Yeah, it's pretty horrific, though.
It probably still is going on, because, of course, the African nations are too poor to be able to... afford the protease inhibitors, so, you know.
Right.
It's probably not much help to them. So, but it's very interesting.
Well,
we are coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. I'm David Christopher Lewis, and you can find many YouTubes on the internet if you just type in my full name, David Christopher Lewis, and I give... You know, we give almost everything out free of charge. We love to do that. The books we do charge for, but in terms of the over 4,800 heart streams that I've been privileged to receive over the last 12 years, virtually, 95% of them are free on our website. So heartscenter.org, hearts plural, no apostrophe, and the book is Living a Soulful Life, offers new teaching on love, brotherhood, and freedom. Volume 1, so there will be a Volume 2 in a couple of years, hopefully. And there's also, you can go to offraonlivingasoulfullife.com also. It's kind of a long URL, but read more about the book and about me and get a press kit and et cetera. So it's
and
really
there's a beautiful picture of Afra on the front of the book.
Yeah, I owned an art gallery in Livingston, Montana for 10 years, and I commissioned this artist, a local artist named Marius Michael George, he's from Romania, to paint it many years ago. And then little did I know, back when I commissioned that probably 9 years ago, that I would be doing all this stuff with Afra, and then that it was all part of the plan, and now it's on the book. So
yeah. Well, that's how you know. It becomes clear that all the dots get connected.
Absolutely.
So, well, would you like to give any messages for our listening audience before we close?
Sure. I'd just like to embrace anyone who is listening live or will hear the recording of this as a spiritual compatriot, a brother, a sister of light, and we're all one. We're all part of the same soul substance of the universe, and it's time for us to just, you know, love one another in every possible way by being respectful, appreciative, reverent, and intuitive, so that we can give our gifts in the best possible way that we're called to give them, without any inhibitions, without any restrictions, and that, you know, live from us, from your soul, love from your soul, give from your soul, and when you do this, I think that you're going to just tap into the highest resource of truth and beingness and love that will provide for you an impetus for your ascension and your joyful existence on this earth and beyond this earth.
Well, great. That's a beautiful message. Well, thank you so much for joining us, David. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan. You're wonderful. I love you, and thanks for this opportunity.
You're very welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing David Christopher Lewis on his book, Living a Soulful Life, Afra's new teaching on love, brotherhood, and freedom. It's a wonderful book filled with great information and meditations and all sorts of wonderful things that you can use in your meditation. Thanks so much for joining us, and join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.